And welcome back to the Sean Green Show. I'm Sean Green. I want to thank everybody out there listening. Make sure you go to SeanGreenShow.com. That's SeanGreenShow.com. Make sure you follow me on Twitter. It's at the Sean Green Show. And you can follow me on Facebook as well. It's Sean Green Show Media. The YouTube page is up. All cool videos and stuff. They're definitely up there. Got a very special guest on the Super Celebrity Hotline. You know I've been following the whole Taylor Leanne Chandler, Michael Phelps, fiasco, all this stuff, and I'm pleased to have on the Super Celebrity Hotline right now Taylor Leanne Chandler, the woman behind the ex-girlfriend of Michael Phelps. Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm great, Sean. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for doing the show because you've been all over the place, and now you're doing the video for Vivid. So how did that come about?
You know, after everything happened with Michael and the media, you know, exposed our relationship, being a sign language interpreter just wasn't in the cards. You know, privacy was gone. And, you know, I never envisioned this, but when Vivid, you know, the Disney world of adult entertainment calls, you're curious to see what you're worth. Yeah. And I took the meeting, and here we are.
And this is the first time you ever did adult films, or have you been?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
And
mm-hmm.
And how would you describe it? Was it, I mean, is it what it's cracked up to be, or is it something you want to keep doing, or?
Well, I have nothing to really compare it to, but my experience was amazing.
Really?
I feel very lucky in that respect, because obviously you hear stories about girls throughout the years and whatnot. But for me, I had an amazing director, Kimberly Kane. So having a woman direct me was amazing. And then my co-star, Ty Roderick, I actually knew. And he came out of retirement to do this film with me. So there was a comfort level there. And my makeup and hair by Cami Darling. I mean, it was the perfect recipe. And Marcy and Steven were just very clear and about following and understanding my apprehension and my anything that I wasn't willing to do. You know, it becomes like a family, as crazy as that sounds. And, you know, that's what they are to me now. Even since shooting, you know, they check up on me. They're, you know, it's a small group. When you've done something like this, it's very intimate, and you know, you become like this little, I don't know, nuclear family, so to speak.
I totally get it. I totally get it. Now, for those people that don't know, Taylor is intersex, and some people may not know what intersex is. Can you explain to people what intersex is?
Yeah, intersex is kind of an umbrella term. There's like several different deviations that fall under that, but normally what it means is there's some form of birth anomaly or birth challenge, meaning that it's possible that there's visible ambiguous genitalia, but
yeah.
Some intersex people don't even know they're intersex. It could not show itself until puberty. Some people go their whole life and it's not found out until they die and they have an autopsy. And, you know, people think in terms of hermaphrodite back in the day, but technically, a mammal, which is what we are, can't be a true hermaphrodite. The only true one are worms. There's no one that has fully functional male and female parts with reproductive and birthing capability.
Wow. And how long, you know, in your life did you figure it out, you know, okay, I'm intersex? Is this early on or was it later on in life?
As soon as I could walk and talk, I said I was a girl. I never said I wanted to be one. I just knew I was. I dressed as a girl, acted like a girl. But it wasn't until I was older, almost preteen, before genetic testing and things were done to kind of take it to another level. And that's when they discovered that I had a uterus. And, you know, it turns out through doing all this testing and going back and doing research that what it appears happened is at the time of my birth, there was a very small what appeared to be vagina on the back side of the penis. And, you know, people don't have a good sense of what that seems like because they envision like an adult. But you got to envision a baby. So everything's really tiny.
Yeah.
And so if you've got like a one-inch penis, what's on the back of it is going to be like the size of like a pinky nail. It's so small. So it's easy for a doctor, especially in the 70s when you didn't talk about this kind of stuff.
Right, to miss that.
To just kind of sew it up and make it go away, and it kind of just blends in with a circumcision, and then here you are to your parents, and they gender classify you as a boy.
Yeah. And
that's what happened.
As a teenager, you know, it had to be like a really, you know, was it like a hard experience to go through, you know, in your teens and you're in high school and you already identify yourself as a woman and you find all this stuff out about you. Did you take it really hard? Or did you just say, okay, oh, well, it is what it is?
Struggle for different reasons. My mother died when I was 3 months old, so my grandparents raised me. And for them, being from an older generation, it was really hard for them to understand the science. And I remember them saying, you know, that doctor's a quack. You know, they took me to therapy and was like, screw his head on straight. Even though I look like a girl, dress like a girl, for my grandfather, it was very hard to come to terms with this. And that remained, you know, up until the time he passed away. But luckily for me, I was, you know, strong to knowing who I am. And I didn't allow, I mean, there was times where I was forced by them to live more androgynous. There was a time where they cut my hair, put me in private school, and I was forced to wear a boy uniform.
Oh, wow.
But even at that point, you know, I challenged everything. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, today, people that are born this way, you know, the statistics show that it's like 1 in 1,000. There's more of us than there are redheads. It's just it's not talked about. And because there's so many variations, people are just unaware of it. You know, it's not something that people necessarily always talk about. A lot of intersex people do not get surgery. Sometimes they get angry with me when I say I got corrective surgery because that implies something was wrong.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of intersex people that are very comfortable with the way they were born. For me, that just wasn't the case. I can talk about my experience.
Right.
But I love the fact that I'm able to bring awareness, you know, to this issue and draw attention to, you know, all the issues on the gender spectrum, regardless of where you fall.
Right. Now let's rewind the clock back to 2014 when you met Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps. How did you two meet?
Believe it or not, we met on Tinder.
Ah.
He was outside the range of age that I had set up, but I've since learned that if someone likes you and they're outside of your scope, they kind of just go into your list. And of course, when he popped up, I recognized him. I mm-hmm. recognized that he was at a grandstand at a racetrack because my dad's a jockey. And, it was the Preakness. And, you know, in the beginning, I really didn't believe it was him. All his pictures had other people in them. And you just, you know, I didn't really follow swimming or anything. I mean, I knew who he was. But beyond the Olympics and just whatever was mainstream media, I mean, I didn't know much. And, you know, as we continued to talk, eventually we got off of Tinder and on to regular phone. And at that point, because I have a background in crisis management, I ran his number and
right.
It matched, you know, Michael Phelps. And, you know, that was the extent of it. At that point, I felt because of who he was and the comfort level we had, I was going to let everything be organic from there forward.
Right.
And, you know, anybody that's done online dating will tell you and knows that it's accelerated. You talk about things that you wouldn't if you were sitting across a table on a date being all prim and proper. You just get this comfort level and you talk about things, you share things, you know, quicker than you would in real life. So by the time that we actually met in real life, I already knew him. I was already comfortable with him. You know, it just was, everything was there. I was like there, hook, line, and sinker.
Now, when you guys are conversing online, and I totally understand the whole online dating, because I've done it before, and you're right, you know, it's easier to talk to somebody when you're by yourself, and your own thing is you and the keyboard, and you're just looking at a picture, and you do get that you get that closeness just by you know typing those words, and you're not necessarily physically with them, because when you're physically with them, you know, you get nervous, and things tend not to flow well right away when you're meeting somebody for the first time, you know, and when you talk to people online, it kind of takes away that buffer in a sense. Now, with talking with him, did the subject of your sexuality come up then, or did you feel the need to tell him then, or did you tell him?
No. I mean, I've gotten a lot of flack for this, but when I had corrective surgery decades ago, I never felt the need to tell anybody anything. You know, because my diagnosis was a physical condition, you know, my birth certificate and driver's license were changed before I ever had corrective surgery, along with my name. And so I've never really told anybody. You know, the guys I dated when I was younger, I would tell them I couldn't have children because I never produced semen and I didn't have ovaries. So, you know, that was all I felt I owed them. But at this point, at 41, I don't really think that anyone was worried about that. But in saying that, there was things that transpired between Michael and I, you know, that lent itself to believe that, you know, he was still cautious of getting me pregnant. So, you know, anybody that thinks he knew, or, you know, how could he not know? I mean, you always have haters that think they know you and want to destroy you online.
Right.
But the reality of it is, I was dating an American hero, an Olympian who was 29 years old, 11 years younger than me at the time. You know, so obviously, I'm attractive in real life. I look like my pictures. I'm 5'8". I'm fit. I'm a size 6". You know, even before him, I'm like a magnet for men that are younger than me, because I do take care of myself. I've always taken pride in my appearance. I'm a former model and stunt woman. You know, even in business, my looks have always helped me. It wasn't until, you know, the media outed me as his girlfriend, then his cougar girlfriend. It was almost like it wasn't enough to out me. Then it was like, okay, the age difference, let's make her a cougar. That wasn't crazy enough. And so they kept digging.
Right.
And then, you know, that's when I told him, but he was already in rehab. At that point, things between us were different. We really weren't together at that point for reasons that had nothing to do with me being intersex or the publicity surrounding us. But I still felt like he needed to know what was getting ready to happen. So I told him first. I called Drew at Octagon. You know, I really felt that this should be a phone call, and Drew refused. So that left me no other option but to tell Michael in an email, because obviously he didn't have his personal cell phone in rehab. And who remembers phone numbers to call out from
right.
a house phone in rehab? And so, you know, it is what it is. And
so,
then the day after that, I told friends and extended family from, like, people I'd been married to. And then on the third day, I released it publicly on my public profile. And, you know, that was something else that people gave me a hard time about. But you got to understand, when this story went public, in 48 hours, I had, like, 2,000 friend requests on my personal Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't necessarily... when this first happens, you're overwhelmed. You don't want strangers being your friend on your personal
right.
page. So that's why a public profile was created.
Right. Now take me back to, like, his – did he – that was the last time you talked to Michael? It was through that email. He never responded to you after that? Or did you guys get a chance to actually talk after?
Me and Michael have had contact since he's been out of rehab. I really don't go into a lot of that because, I mean, at this point, you know, some things I feel just need to remain private between us because there's a lot of things that just Michael and I know, and as long as the media doesn't get a hold of it, you know, I feel like we're grasping onto that last bit of privacy. You got to understand, the night of September 30th, my phone was on an open Wi-Fi network, and that's where my phone was hacked, and those are where the text messages and private photos of us were leaked. And that's what was so crazy about all of this, because, you know, anybody that knows me, my privacy was so vital to me. Even conversations I had with Michael, it was always about privacy. You know, I think part of it was, in the back of my head, I was aware of his level of celebrity, and I knew that with things being that new with us, to be public and out in the open, that someone would want to know who I am. And there's always that person from your past that's ready, willing, and able to sell you out. And we all have that person.
Right.
And so I was conscious of it.
Yeah, and I've only been talking to you for about 10 minutes, and you seem like a very cool person. And I can only assume that there were no hard feelings, you know, after everything was said and done after rehab. I'm just going to take a wild guess at that, you know, that he's cool. No hard feelings. It was just, you know, it was just haters, you know, that's what I'm gathering from you. That's what happened.
You know, the thing about it is, people break up every day for lots of different reasons. Just because he was in the public eye and now it's thrust me into that same public eye, you know, certain things don't need to be dredged all over the place. I mean, yeah, we broke up. The thing about it is, he's a great guy. He didn't maliciously go out and get a DUI. And I mean, obviously that's the trigger that put me in the spotlight. You know, the media saw me leaving his house the night of September 30th. He didn't do anything to purposely hurt me. I'm pretty sure he does not like the publicity that's come from all of this. I didn't either in the beginning. I had to come to terms with the fact that this was my life. This was what I'd been dealt. You know, if we lived in a different world and he didn't produce billions of dollars for his sponsors, this could be a totally different conversation. But I think what people don't understand and don't really think about, and you being in the media obviously know, if I wasn't telling the truth, which a lot of people don't believe me, his people would have sued me, cease and desisted me. They would have brought me into court so quick my head would have spun.
Right.
And that's the nature of this business. I'm sure that they would prefer that I probably hadn't have gotten so vocal, but the thing about it is, I didn't necessarily have a choice. Because of text messages and stuff that was leaked, people already knew the things that I'm talking about. Because we shared pictures, we shared conversations through text messages, and so it was already out there in the interweb. There wasn't a whole lot I could do about it. For a long time, I only talked about what was out there, and anything that pertained to him, I would always say, you know, that's his story to tell. You know, you need to ask him. Then I went on Howard Stern, and needless to say, he has a way of
he has a way of just keep like digging, and they'll eventually get out. And I totally get that. And like I said, things between you and Michael, you know, they're private, and you know. And it unfortunately became public because of, I'll just say it, because of snakes. And you know, in the end, I think it, you know, it works out for you because you have this new movie out going for the gold for Vivid Video.
Yes.
Now, what's the synopsis of this film? Is it, I mean, is it just straight no script, or is it there are actual script, and then you guys are just acting out scenes? How is that done?
I mean, it's not so much that it's scripted, but it definitely is my story and my love affair with Michael. People are going to see what drew him to me, and then they're going to see the transition of our relationship sexually. You know, even though I'm older than him, he certainly was the more experienced, adventurous lover of the two of us, and he enlightened me. He brought me to places that I would have never gone in my life, and you're going to see that in the film. People, I think, are going to be surprised that the film has, it's more like a film versus just a straight up porn.
Yeah.
It does tell our story. They interview me. I talk about it. You know, there's certain little things that are tongue in cheek because there was a lot of reports that him and I had sex at M&T Stadium during halftime at a Ravens game. If anybody was smart enough to check it out, they would have seen it was an away game when we beat the Cleveland Browns the first time.
Right.
I was at his house. We didn't have sex during halftime. It was hours after. But, I mean, it was kind of funny to replay it that way. So
right.
During the game, he's texting Ray Lewis and Ray Rice. You know, it's a really intense game. And if I remember correctly, we won by, like, it was really close, like 21-23, something like that. And, you know, he had bet on other games that day and needed, like, a specific spread with the Denver game in Seattle. And, you know, so we play up that kind of stuff in the film. And, you know, then there's some times where I'm by myself and, you know, I'm missing Michael, and, you know, I kind of live out a fantasy of what I want to happen when he comes back from a meet, and the things that happen are things that really did happen with us. I would say about 90% of the film is accurate of our sex life.
Oh, wow.
And then some of it, you know, it's Hollywood, so you need the illusion and glamour of Hollywood to some degree.
Wow. Now, can I ask you this? Are you currently dating, or how has the dating scene been, you know, since all this happened? Do you get offers from guys to date?
That's funny that you ask. You know, after Michael, I was, like, not really looking to date anybody because of the fame that had kind of come my way. You quickly learn that people have motives. But then someone that was a fan of mine, because I have lots of fans now,
mm-hmm.
We clicked and we started seeing each other. He's 27. He's a former hockey player. He's 6'5". So I feel like I traded up. You know, I got an inch taller, a few years younger, and he's beautiful. But, you know, there's a lot of media and craziness that surrounds me. And on the eve of, you know, this film coming out, we ended things because, you know, he just wasn't ready to be part of my world. And he has children, and we had to really think about what was best for everybody involved. So now I am single again.
So
and I'm not mad at him. I really understand.
So, I mean, it was just like a pro or a semi-pro? Or, I mean, he was just, you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know.
No, at this point, he's just a regular, wonderful guy. You know, I won't even say that. You know, he's wonderful. I mean, he has what I would consider a more traditional job at this point, but he's an amazing man. I wish things were different. I mean, we both care about each other, but there's other lives that are involved, and unfortunately, I'm on the upswing of a media roller coaster, and I'm not in a position where I can protect him. We just felt that because of the children, it was important that he stay protected. I mean, I made him get off my Facebook and all my social media alone, but, you know, there's certain things in life that kind of suck and aren't fair, and this is kind of one of them. Once again, if we lived in a different world, maybe things could be different. But when there's an ex-wife involved and custody and children, you know, there's a lot of things at play. And a lot of people are not kosher with what I'm doing as far as a career move at this point. And I get that. This isn't for everybody. This is what was right for me at this point. And I'm proud of the body of work that I created with Ty. And, you know, so far, the comments online seem to mostly be positive. I'm almost to 75,000 views on Pornhub, which is, like, unheard of. You know, I bumped Kim Kardashian off the number one spot on Vivid.com.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of crazy all on its own. And then Steven told Robin Leach of the Las Vegas Sun that my DVD will be launched at the AVN Adult Expo in Vegas on the 21st.
Yeah, definitely,
so,
man.
There's a lot of big things happening. And then I also have a book coming out this week as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good. What's the name of the book?
The book, this is the first of two, and the book is called The Making of Going for the Gold. But it kind of starts with my divorce from my ex-husband, Patrick, and it goes through my career, moving to D.C., being an interpreter, how I met Michael, and it's a little more detailed as to what our relationship was like. It takes you inside our world, his home, and what things were like, what the night of September 30th was like for us, a little bit more about the players that were involved in this, you know, kind of telenovela is what it felt like at the time.
Yeah.
And then it takes you behind the scenes of what it was really like making the movie. And you feel like you're there with me. So you get a sense of what it was really like for me doing this, because this was so polar opposite of anything I'd ever done in my life. I come from a very conservative family and background and education. So this was really out there for me. I mean, if you asked any of my friends, this would have been the last thing they would have said I'd ever do.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I'm smelling maybe book tour coming up.
Yeah, because this summer we'll come out with a full-length book that's my whole life story. My life has been amazing. I've done everything I ever wanted to do, and my exes are, you know, kind of a who's who of sports, because I've always been in an upper echelon of social setting, and so my girlfriends, most of them are married to someone in sports. You know, I worked in design when I first moved to Orlando. So, you know, I worked on houses. I was involved with events and charities and balls. And this was my dating pool. This was the social circle I was in.
Right. You dated me around.
And I've always made good money and supported myself. And so the book's going to really dive into a lot of things. I'm not trying to hurt anybody. So a lot of people, it'll be innuendo. It will, you know, you probably would be able to guess who certain people are, but at the end of the day, I really don't want to, quote unquote, out someone just because they dated me, you know, 20, 15, 12 years ago. That just seems silly. But, you know, some people, it doesn't matter. They're okay with it. And so there will be pictures and different things of people I was with.
Yeah. Now, I mean, part of me, you know, I'm like, you know, it kind of sucks, though. You know, that you date these guys, and they, I mean, in a sense, you have to end it because of what, you know, they may think or what their people may think. And I'm the type of person that you date who you want to date. If they make you feel good, if they make you complete, they make you who you are and they make you a better person, it shouldn't really, in my book, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm the type of person that if I'm, I can be the biggest star in the world, and if I happen to have fell in love, you know, with somebody that was different from me, then hey, so be it, and damn everybody else. But that's, you know, that's the world I live in.
Well, I wish everybody thought like you, Sean.
it's mind-boggling.
That would be awesome.
I mean, it's really mind-boggling, and it's like when I hear these stories that you're telling me, you know, it kind of makes me angry because I'm like, you know, you obviously had a really good thing going on with Michael, and then you had to end it because of other people and other entities that felt like they would be hurt by your relationship. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of crappy, you know, and, you know,
I'm lucky though, Sean, that with all of this coming out of all the men that I've dated and been married to, only two people walked away from me. They're supportive. They were more concerned with my well-being, because what people don't understand is, you know, people wanted to accuse Michael of being gay and all these different things. Gay men are not attracted to women. That's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard of. You know, they can appreciate a beautiful woman or some boobs or whatever, but beyond that, you know, that's not what they're going to be attracted to. Michael is extremely straight-arrowed, let me tell you. And all the guys that I've dated throughout my life have been, some of them, I would even go so far as to say, were homophobic. And, you know, almost everybody in my life, I didn't know anything about my past. There are a few that did. But, I mean, there's no point in me saying who that is, because then people are going to be like, oh, my God, they knew and they were still with you. But the two that walked away from me, one of them, I get it. He's married and he has two children and doesn't want to be caught up in this. And I understand that. I truly do. He maybe could have handled it a little differently the way it went down.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second person, it really hurt me because he cheated on me twice during our relationship.
Oh,
we
wow.
broke up the first time. I went back to him. Even when my marriage with Patrick ended, he's who I ran to. He, you know, we all have that one guy that's in our life that we love, or girl that we love. And if we're single, or, you know, you always think, oh, what if, or I wish. And he was that guy. Well, he walked away from me in the most harsh of ways, and it killed me. And, you know, people can hate me or say I'm wrong or whatever, but I named him on Howard Stern because I was pissed.
Yeah.
And it hurt. I'm still a girl. I still have feelings, you know. And what he did to me, it felt like he was hurting me or cheating on me all over again. And him and I have been apart since like 2007.
Wow.
But he's a former New York Jet. And it just, it killed me because he was with me. There's nothing about me that's any different other than, yeah, the world knows a lot more about my life than I ever envisioned. But it is what it is. He has nothing to be ashamed of. And that's how he made me feel, is that he was ashamed of me and what we had. And it just kind of irked me. But, I mean, I guess everybody's entitled to their opinion or perception. But I'm still a girl with feelings, and I reacted.
Yeah, now that's unfortunate. But, hey, things are looking up for you. And I'm glad you have things going, you know, going your way for a change. Taylor Leanne Chandler, the name of the film is Going for the Gold. It's on Vivid.com. Make sure you guys check it out. Also, you can follow her on Facebook. It's Taylor Leanne Chandler, all one word. On Twitter, it's Real Tay, CHATLC, if you want to follow her on Twitter. Oh, my God. Thanks so much for doing this interview. You are so down to earth. You know,
and thank you, Sean. I enjoyed it. It was a pleasure. Great interview.
Great.
I would be happy to be on your show anytime.
Yeah, if you're ever in Chicago, make sure you stop by, you know, and trust me, we'll take care of you here in Chicago, okay?
Oh, I'd love to do in studio, get a picture with you. That'd be great.
All right, great. We'll be back right after this.